What is up, and welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Finberg, and today's episode, we're going to be recapping the regular season. I mean, I, at the beginning of the year, kind of thought that it would go this way. I think most Wizards fans thought, actually, as a matter of fact, I predicted it would go this way. I posted this to Twitter earlier today, but I predicted on October 21st, 2024, in my season preview show with my brother. Go check it out if you haven't listened. I mean, it's kind of out of date now, but I predicted the Wizards would go 18-64. I started at 23 wins, and I worked my way down. And by the 21st of October, I firmly sat there and said 18-64. And if you fast forward to today, April 13th, the time I'm recording this, it is true. The Wizards have finished the regular season 18-64. I mean, I don't know what their regular season win total was. I'm pretty sure, honestly, it was like 15.5 because they had won 15 games the year prior. So they, if you bet the Wizards over for some reason, then congrats to you for making some money. But they hit it. You know, they got 18 wins. I mean, there was a point at the beginning of the year when they started 2-18. They lost 16 in a row that I didn't think they would even get to 10 wins. You know, I feared at some point they might be the worst team, in NBA history. And then the rookie started to figure out. Brian Keefe started to figure it out. And the Wizards started to figure out. And they won some games. I mean, they won at Detroit and then at Denver back-to-back. I mean, that was probably the highlight of the season right there, and I have some highlights that I'll go through in my Teddy Awards and my end-of-season awards for the Wiz. But there were some highs, and obviously there were the lowest of lows. I mean, you can't get lower than at certain points losing 16 in a row twice in one season. Lower than the lineups that you saw the Wizards throwing out there with JT Thor and Colby Jones, and not to discredit those guys, but they're not going to get rotation minutes on realistically any other team. Maybe the Utah Jazz, maybe Charlotte, but other than that, they're not playing anywhere. And yet the Wizards are throwing them out there alongside, you know, your Anthony Gills of the world in game 77 of a meaningless game. So there were certainly some fun points, but there was obviously some low points. That's going to happen when you lose, 64 games. So I want to talk briefly about the current. I want to talk about the game that the Wizards had played on today, Sunday I'm recording this. Bob Carrington hits the game winner. It was a pretty crazy sequence, realistically, at the end of the game, because the Wizards had led by double digits, realistically, since the halfway point of the first quarter. They were playing really well. And against, I mean, the Heat didn't play Bam or Hero or really any of their main guys. I mean, Jaime Jaquez had 41, so you know he, I mean, that's what happens. I mean, Pat Connaughton had 43 for the Bucks in their overtime win. Tristan Vucevic, career high in points, rebounds, and assists. He had 28, 11, and 5. On efficient shooting. I mean, he was phenomenal. His best game easily as a pro. But again, it was against Miami's reserves for the better part. And yet the Wizards were winning by double digits with their rookies and their end of the bench guys for most of the game. And then Miami makes a run like you thought they would at the end. I mean, you know, Jaime Jaquez takes over. Terry Rozier couldn't hit anything. Haywood Highsmith's making some shots. And you're sitting there as a Wizards fan like, you know, I'm kind of rooting for the team to play well. You know, I want Bob and all the rookies to, you know, close it out on a high note. But at the same time, you're kind of like, well, you know, it's kind of better if they can't fall outside the top five. And you knew Utah was going to lose to Minnesota. So at that point, it's like, you know, would you rather be tied with for the worst record and do a coin flip for it? Or would you rather win and guarantee, you know, when Utah loses, you get the odds associated with the second worst record, not the worst record. It's not the biggest of deals, but as a Wizards fan, it was kind of weird. You know, you're sitting there and you don't really know what to root for. You know, the Wizards make a shot and you're like, okay, I can live with them winning this game. And then Miami retakes the lead by three. And you're like, you know what? This is probably the better result. At least that's how I was viewing it. I don't know how you guys were viewing it, but it was kind of going back and forth for me. And then the Heat take a 4-point lead at the end. And you're kind of like, all right, this is over. 10 seconds left. They make a pair of free throws and the game is, you know, kind of over. And then Justin Champagne, because he's just been absolutely phenomenal over the last five games, of course he goes out there and he drills a three to cut it to a 1-point game with about 5.5, 6 seconds left. And then they get he called timeout. They inbound it to Josh Christopher and he runs backcourt. He barely stepped on the backcourt line, but he just, I guess, forgot where he was, lost where he was on the court. And the Wizards get the ball. And so at that point, I'm like, this would be the most Wizards thing ever. I think David Aldridge tweeted that. The most Wizards way to win a meaningless game that actually probably, technically speaking, hurts them in the lottery odds. And they go out and obviously give themselves a chance because Christopher steps back court. And then Bob Carrington calls his own shot. You know, the Wizards don't have any timeouts, but Bob's like, here, give me the ball. So while they're reviewing it, I think in the huddle, Bub calls his own number, and he goes out there. This is one of the most tough shots that I've seen anybody make this year, let alone a wizard. He's like the defender's draped all over him. I don't know how he actually made it, but he somehow shoots the floater going to his left with his right hand high off the glass and banks it in at the buzzer for the win to give the Wizards a 119-118 win. Really cool way to end the season for everyone. I mean, it's not easy, you know, to be a player or a staff member. It's not easy covering the team, but I can't imagine going through the practices, traveling to all these arenas, and just getting worked a lot of the time and losing 64 of your 82 games. Like, that can't be easy to continue to go into work and to continue to try to build towards something. It was nice. I was happy for Bob to get that moment. And his rookie year, playing all 82, by the way, that's a phenomenal feat. I can't tell you I know Chet played 82 games his rookie year, but Bob is, I think, the youngest player to play in all 82 games. My guy, Wizards Muse, tweeted that out as well. But I'm pretty sure he's the youngest player to play all 82 games. He's one of, 10 to 12 this year to play in all 82. It's a really cool feat. So shout out to Bub Carrington for playing in all 82, but it's a nice way for him to end what I thought was a really promising rookie season. Nice way for the Wizards to end it as well. And yes, the result of it with Minnesota beating Utah is the Wizards are no longer tied for the NBA's worst record. They are solely in possession of the second worst record. And so I'm going to read you off the lottery odds as follows for the second worst record. Makes my job easier because I don't have to explain to everyone the coin flip and what that might be between the Wizards and the Jazz, when that might be. All those questions can kind of stop because we know now where the Wizards are and how they're locked in. So here are their lottery odds as follows. They have a 14% chance at the number one pick, a 13.4% chance at the number two pick, a 12.7% chance at the number three pick, a 12% chance at the number four pick, and a 27.8% chance at the number five pick. And because they own the second worst record, they can now fall out to six, and there's a 20% chance that happens. From 7 to 14, there's a 0% chance. So to relay, it's 14%, 13.4%, 12.7%, 12%, 27.8%, and then 20% is associated with six. 7 to 14, they can't get, meaning they are guaranteed a top six pick in this draft. And I think there's six prospects that I realistically would like. You know, I have my big board, and I'll do another episode of that, a couple weeks when we really get into our draft stuff. But I'm going to hold off on that for now. I think you understand the odds at stake. Cooper Flagg is going to be one, and that's a franchise-altering player. Everybody wants him. So many teams tanked because they wanted a chance at this kid. There's all the rumors he might stay at Duke. There's just no way. If that happens, then I'd be absolutely shocked. But when he declares, ultimately, let's say the Wizards win the lottery. They win Cooper Flagg. It's huge. But even if not, there's Dylan Harper's, Ace Bailey's, VJ Edgecombe. You got Trey Johnson. There's Derek Queen, local product from Maryland. There's so many great players. That's six right there. Even if that's not your top six, I don't know if you know that that's my top six, but that's a really good top six. And I think the Wizards will be lucky to get any of those guys. So, nonetheless, I do like where they're at. And you got a lot of people that are saying, hold up. If you look at the history, it's actually better with the new lottery system, which I believe was implemented back in 2019. They say, hold up, it's actually better historically to own the NBA's second worst record than the worst record. And you sit there and you say, That makes sense considering the Pistons finished dead last the last 2 years and got the fifth pick both of those years. That's just kind of what has happened. And you look at the history of the team that finished second worst. 2019 Cavaliers got the fifth pick and the 2020 Cavaliers got the fifth pick. So terrible start. But then you got 2021 Pistons who get the first pick. They get Cade Cunningham, completely turn their franchise around, and 4 years later, they're the sixth seed and they're in the playoffs. Orlando Magic, 2022, they get the first overall pick, get Paolo Banchero. What, 2 years later, they are a top five seed. They were the fifth seed in the East, and they're in the playoffs. 2023 Rockets, they get the fourth overall pick. Who did they take with the fourth overall pick, the 2023 Rockets? Jabari Smith. He hasn't been great, but look, the Rockets are the two seed, so clearly they're fine. Not because of Smith, but still, the fourth pick is all right. And last year's Wizards, they finished second worst, and they got the second pick where they should have been. They get Alex Saar, who had a pretty solid rookie season, probably going to make all-rookie first team, and has a lot of potential. And so now you look at the 2025 Wizards. The last of the last four second worst records, Tua got the number one pick, and they're back in the playoffs pretty quickly. The Wizards got the second pick last year, and the Rockets got the fourth pick. So that's a pretty good precedent to set.
So look, yes, the Wizards would have benefited from losing today and then also winning that coin flip against the Jazz so they couldn't fall outside the top five. But historically speaking, the second worst record, you know, the lottery's been kind to that team. And, you know, the Wizards just got to bank on that trend continuing, and hopefully they land the top pick in this year's draft. So that's their odds. That's where they're at right now. In terms of a look around the league and some of their other 2025 draft picks, because if you listen to my previous pod, you would know that Washington had a very big rooting interest out west. They already knew that Memphis had clinched a play-in spot, and they need Memphis to make the playoffs to get that top 14 protected pick via the Marcus Smart trade. But if you're looking at just where those picks lie right now, here's where they are. Some of the results the Wizards needed. They needed the Warriors to beat the Clippers. That didn't happen. The Clippers beat the Warriors. So now it's Memphis at Golden State in the first play-in game to get the 7th seed. And clearly the Wizards fans, you know, Memphis winning that game and getting the 7th seed does not put them above Golden State in the draft order. They are still tied. There will still be a coin flip because they finished the regular season with the same record, and the draft order is based on regular season outside of the lottery. Where they do, like Memphis winning that game, or if Memphis goes and wins the game to get the 8th seed, they will still be tied in three ways with Memphis, with Milwaukee and Golden State for technically the 18th pick. And I'll get to that now, but Golden State did not win, so that was not a good result. Dallas did not beat Memphis. Memphis killed them, and Milwaukee ended up beating Detroit, which is good because now they're tied with Memphis. Minnesota ends up beating Utah. That was a win-win, but that's also good because they have 49 wins now, moves them above Memphis in the standings. So with all that being said, where am I getting at here? The Memphis Grizzlies make the playoffs. If they beat Golden State and make the playoffs, or if they lose to Golden State and then beat either Sacramento or Dallas to in the 8-9 game to win the 8 seed and make the playoffs, the Wizards would get their pick. That pick would be either 18, 19, or 20 in the draft. Can't be anything worse, can't be anything better. That is because the Bucks, the Grizzlies, and the Warriors are all tied with 48 wins and 34 losses. That would put them tied for the 18th pick. Now, I think it's a coin flip or whatever random drawing they do, but they'll figure it out in that three-way tiebreaker. And if the Grizzlies win it, they get the 18th pick that goes to the Wizards. If they get second, it'll be the 19th or whatever, or third, they get 20th. But still, anything in that range is a win for the Wizards. That's you'd have two top 20 picks, potentially one being the number one overall pick, but one guaranteed to be top six in a very deep and loaded draft class. And oh, by the way, moving forward, they have either the 39th or 40th pick via Phoenix. Let's get into that actually real quick. The Wizards only own one second round pick this year. I know a lot of people have seen that they own Detroit, that they own, who else do they own? Golden State, I believe, was the other pick, because the Wizards don't own their own. Boston has it in some series of trades from the Tommy Shepard era. So no, the Wizards, if they get the second pick, will not be picking 32nd in the round. They don't have their own. But what they do have is Phoenix's second round pick. They have the best of Phoenix's, Golden State's, and Detroit's, I believe. And obviously Golden State and Detroit are way better than Phoenix. So they're going to get Phoenix's. The others were sent out to Memphis in that trade for Smart, and also to Milwaukee in that trade for AJ Johnson when they traded Kuzma. And so the Wizards get the best of those three. They're going to pick Phoenix's, and that one is locked into being either number 39 or number 40 in the draft. And here's why. The Phoenix Suns were tied for the NBA's 9th worst record with Portland because the Suns lost to the Kings, which is a good result, and Portland beat up on the Lakers. So they are both tied, I think, 36 and 46 out west. Again, a coin flip or random drawing, whatever it is, will decide whether the Wizards are picking 39th or 40th. But it's either of those picks. They can't pick better or worse in the second round. But they are guaranteed at this point if Memphis makes the playoffs, that pick conveys. The Wizards are guaranteed three top 40 picks in a very deep draft class. That's great, you know. And they guarantee themselves a top six pick. So it's kind of all going to plan, you know. And that kind of gets me to this point. And one of the big bullet points that I put on the preview for this pod on Twitter was my assessment of this season, right? I feel like it's only right that if I'm doing an assessment, I'm doing a recap podcast, that I want to actually culminate what I took away from this season. And I'm going to get into individual players and specifics like that. But what I also want to do is kind of give you, you know, where I'm at, you know, after 2 years of this rebuild. How confident am I as a person who has watched, 82 times two, that's 164, that has watched 164 Wizards games over the last 2 years of this rebuild. Was it five preseason games? Add another 10 onto that because I watched all the preseason, add all the summer league, and on everything that's been associated with this team, I've been there. And so I think I'm a pretty good person to give you my assessment. And here it is. if you look at the total body of work, right, and I'm not factoring in last year, a lot of people said was year zero, not technically year one. I'm going to count it as year one because I count it basically ever since Winger and Dawkins traded Beal. That's the move that kickstarted the rebuild. So year three will begin on what, June? I think they traded him on June 4th. You can, don't quote me on that because I actually don't know. Maybe it was, no, it was definitely later than June 4th. It was mid-June, I think. But they traded him in June of 2024? No, 2023. And so if you look at it from that point, the Wizards obviously finished 2024-25, 18-64. That's after they finished 15-67 the year before. So if you're looking at some positive, that's a 3-win improvement. So shout out to Keek. Shout out, I can't even say that with a straight face, but you get what I'm saying. The Wizards are now, and this is staggering, by the way. I couldn't even believe this, even though I probably should. The Wizards are a staggering 33-131 over the last two seasons. I mean, that is actually so bad. I can calculate that win percentage right now pretty easily, I think. So that's a point two win percentage. They won 20%, I think that's correct, of their games over that stretch. Whatever it is, it's absolutely terrible. But it's reality, and that's not like a bad thing. That's what they're trying to do, right? I mean, the 2 years before that, they were a perfectly mediocre 35-47, which is 70-94 over 2 years, but nobody cares because they're still not making the playoffs and they're still picking in the late lottery. But the last 2 years, they are also not in the playoffs and they're picking in the very high lottery. And they have a lot of good players to show for it. So I think you'd rather be 33-131 over 2 years than 70-94. As crazy as that sounds, that is a fact for Wizards fans, I would assume, at least for me. So it is staggering to hear that, but that's where they are. And I think that's kind of where they want it to be. They have four rookies this year that really played well. And you didn't get the biggest look at AJ Johnson because he came over at the deadline and got more playing time as the year progressed, but he showed flashes. And there were the low points of AJ Johnson are incredibly low. Like there's times where he'll just like dribble. I know, you know what I mean? If you actually watch the last like 5-6 games, he just does like 45 dribble moves in between the legs, behind the backs, or, you know, at the top of the key, and nothing happens. Like there's no ball movement. He just does that. And then he'll pull up for a three or he'll turn the ball over and it's bad. But then you got times where he's decisive and he gets downhill and he's really good at finishing around the rim. He had that big game in the fourth quarter. I think it was against Brooklyn where he hit the go-ahead three before the Wizards eventually lost that game. But he has shown signs. He had some big dunks, some athletic plays. He's got it. You know, he's got the tools. He's still raw. He's what, 20? So I liked a lot of what I saw. I'm really happy with that trade, the Kuzma trade, definitely. And so you continue to look at the other rookies, right? You have Alex Saar, who, let's not talk about his percentages. We will. I mean, you can't shoot sub 40% as a rookie, right? Like, and that's been the big knock on people that don't want him to be all NBA, all rookie first team, is how are you 7 feet tall and you're shooting sub 40% from the field? And it's not like you're a great 3-point shooter because you're shooting less than 31% from the field. Your free throws is around 67%. Like the percentages and everything with Alex Saar is bad. But look at what he does. Look at the role he has compared to other rookies. If Alex Saar could play with guys like Bam and Hero and all them, like Khalil Ware does, and just, you know, catch perfectly thrown lobs and benefit from a defensive system where everything isn't just funneled into him. I mean, you look at Daniel Gafford with the terrible Wizards defenses. I mean, he was phenomenal, but he'd also get into foul trouble and he'd have some lapses because the Wizards ask him to do so much. And then throw him in Dallas with so many better players and defenders, and everyone's like, oh my God, I didn't know Daniel Gafford was this great of a rim protector. It's like, no, he was, but the Wizards were asking him to do way too much on that end, on both ends, realistically. And when you play with better players, as you've seen with the Detroit Pistons, all of the younger players get better magically. It's a miracle. But when you're playing with a better players and better system and better defenders, it's way easier to shine. You have less of a burden on yourself. It's easy to just get into your rhythm and be more efficient. But I guarantee you throw Khalil Ware where Alex Saar is, he might be more efficient than Saar, but he's not nearly as efficient as he is. And that's what the benefit is of playing in a terrific Miami Heat system. That's just the case. And so, yeah, you can knock Alex Saar on his percentages, but I'm going to choose to be positive here. The rim protection, the defense is real. I mean, you saw that showcased. I think he leads all rookies with 1.6 blocks per game, which is pretty cool. He was phenomenal as a rim protector. Had lapses, right? Like individually, one-on-one in the post, he got schooled a lot of nights. And that's going to happen when you're a young big man. You're going to get schooled by guys like Vucevic and Valanciunas, you know, when he's not your teammate, probably in practice too. Sabonis, Poeltl, like all of those guys are going to give him fits, right? Because he's just not there yet, IQ-wise or experience-wise. But at the same time, I liked what I saw from his rim protection, his IQ on defense, being in the right spots. I did like that. And so there's the defensive side. It's there, right? He's got the length, the size, the ability to block shots. We know that. Offensively, you saw a leap, right? I mean, look, you look at he shot, what, 30.8% from three. He was shooting like 11% on a decent amount of looks over the first month of the season. That went up to like 19% in month two. And then he had a month in month four, you know, that he was shooting 46% on like a high volume, like four threes a game. And he finishes the season at 31%, which, you know, looking at where he started, isn't that bad all said and done, especially for a 7-foot rookie. He's shown an ability to make those threes, and he's only going to get better. And you look at, you know, there were some decent creation moments too. He's a very good short roll passer. You know, when he sets the pick and he catches the ball around the key and he's got like one defender there, he's got someone else cutting, he'll find the cutter. If the guy who's cutting gets taken up by the help defender, he can pass it out to the guy who's now open on the wing. Like, he's a very smart player. He's got great vision for a guy his size that plays his position. And he showed that with his short roll passing. And he showed flashes of you know, finishing around the rim. Now, he absolutely needs to stop fading on layups. It is the most infuriating thing when Alex Saar gets to the rim. He does all the work and fades away for no reason. Put the guy in the rim. Dunk the ball. Go up strong and get fouled. You're 7 foot. Please. It was very infuriating. And I know all Wizards fans have been saying and crying for it all year that he just needs to play more physical and go up strong. And the last thing I'll mention is his rebounding, because at 7 foot on a really bad rebounding team, you need a guy like Alex Saar that is going to rebound the ball. Far too little rebounds this year for Saar. I think he finished with 6.5 rebounds per game, which isn't terrible. But again, if you're starting every game pretty much and you're 7 feet tall, you need to grab way more rebounds. I mean, at least around 8.5 to 9 per game. And that's kind of a baseline, right? He needs to be more physical and aggressive on the boards. So, like, this is kind of maybe sounded negative, but I'm very optimistic about him. A lot of guys said he was going to be a bust when the Wizards drafted him. I think he showed that he can belong in this league. He does belong in this league on both ends of the floor. And so I'm really excited about kind of what I saw from Saar. You look at Bob Carrington. I mean, the mid-range is so smooth, and that wasn't even a part of his game that I honed in on the pre-draft process, but I mean, he's pretty much automatic from mid-range, and he's got to get more efficient shooting from the outside, and that wasn't really his thing entering the draft, but obviously he'll get better at that. Finishing around the rim, I'd like to see him more aggressive taking it to the cup. He's more of a floater mid-range three guy and not really a layup also guy, so I'd like to see him get to the rim more, but I enjoyed what I saw from Bub. You know, I have no regrets about the Denny trade, and you guys know my thoughts. I did a whole episode on that, but I really enjoyed what I saw from Bob, you know, and playing in all 82 games is an unbelievable feat, let alone the fact like his father passed away mid-season. He could have easily just said, you know what, I need some time, but he's like, no, I want to be here. You know, I want to play. And he finished and he played all 82 games. And he said after the game, you know, playing every game is meaningful to me. And you need guys like Bob to change the culture. You know, when you continuously lose and lose and lose, you need some guys that are just like, you know what, F that, I want to win games. Like, let's turn this around. And I'm going to be here every step of the way. And he had a couple quotes that were really cool down the stretch. But you know, you really like guys like Bub. Great character. Everyone on the team seems to, you know, love him. He's a really infectious personality. And that's his off-the-court stuff. I mean, on the court, he's a baller. So really cool. Really cool for him to end his rookie season, not only playing on all 82, but on a game winner like that on the road, a mob by his teammates. You know, it was really cool to see. So, you know, I love what I saw from him. And then look at Keyshawn George. I think his nickname is The Key, which is pretty sick. You know, he's the key to the lock. He, like, locks people up. That's kind of, I don't know, that's what I take out of it. But I think it's cool. He's a two-way star. Like, that's what I said when the Wizards drafted him. It wasn't a flashy pick. Some people called it a reach. Some had second-round grades on him. But the Wizards traded up two picks for him. They gave up their second to move up just to get him because they knew what they had. He is a phenomenal on-ball defender. Arguably, the Wizards, actually, no, I will say it. He was their best on-ball defender, definitely the most consistent on-ball defender. 1.3 steals per game, you know, nearly a block per game at 0.7 blocks per game. Had a couple games where he had like 5, 6 plus stocks. It was impressive to see him defend. He ended that season or the season a couple games ago when he forced Lonnie Walker to commit a flagrant foul because the defense he was playing was so good. That's kind of, I think, what I would like to use to showcase how good he was on that end. And you show, like, the three ball was there, and then his efficiency also, like, Sar has to get better. But again, he's a guy that started the season shooting quite poorly, and then he picked it up, and you saw that percentage slowly rise to where I think he shot 32% from three. And again, that's not phenomenal, but it's not terrible. And considering where he started, I'm fine with that number at the end of the year. So that's kind of my thoughts on the rookies. You know, I don't want to sound like biased here, but I think the Wizards kind of killed it with this draft. I think they went 3 for 3, and you factor in Johnson in that trade. I think that's another, I don't want to say 4 for 4 because they didn't draft him, but technically speaking, they kind of have four really great rookies from this class. And then you don't even talk about Bilal, right? He's entering year three, and there's a lot to unpack with Bilal. The defense, it's seen across the board. Like, the defense is there, and I think that's what Will Dawkins always wants with these two-way guys. It's like, you know, maybe the offense isn't going to get to where you want it to be, but the defense will be there. And they have guys like that across the board, especially Bilal. His defense is there. He can take away the opposing team's best player. Where he needs to get better is his shot. He needs to, because his first step's really quick. I mean, you've seen that all year. His dribble moves got better. His passing got better at a couple double-doubles, even at a triple-double. But where it needs to get better is that shot, because if that shot's not falling, or like you saw this year, it's not falling and defenders don't respect it. They just play him in the paint. Then he can't use the quick first step. He can't use it to not only get to the rim for himself, but to collapse the defense and create for others with that vision. He needs to get the three ball, and that's a must. That's the absolute must to add to this offseason. He's not playing in the Olympics, so have a full offseason to himself to lock in and to prepare for next season, get that shot down. That needs to happen for Bilal to make that leap from year two to year three. That's a big leap for the Wizards, and if they want to actually make a leap next year and be a competent team, or if they're going to continue to be at this bottom of the barrel, like it could happen if a lot of things happen, but also if Bilal can't add that shot, that really hurts his game and hurts his strength of beating guys off the dribble with that first step. So they have a lot of, you know, the Wizards have a lot of really good young guys, and I kind of went off on a tangent there, but my focus here is my analysis on the season. So they have a lot of good young guys. Career year for Jordan Poole. I posted this. Let me find it, because I posted the other day and I want to talk about it. For all the people that wrote Jordan Poole off, and I'm not going to say you were wrong to do so, because I mean, he was pretty bad. He was pretty bad the first, what, 60 plus games of his first year in Washington. You know, I understand why people did write him off, but you shouldn't have. And I kept trying to say, like, yeah, he's not playing well, but look at the system he's playing in. You know, he's not a number one option. You're asking him to play like he's Steph Curry, coming off all these screens and pin downs. He is a point guard. He needs to create for himself and for others. And Brian Keefe saw that. So, you know, credit to Brian Keefe for resurrecting Jordan Poole's success here in Washington. But, you know, nonetheless, looking at his stats this season versus last season, it's career highs across the board, right? He went from 17.4 points per game to 20.5 points per game, 2.7 rebounds to 3. 4.4 assists to 4.5. Minimal, but still improvement. 1.1 steals per game to 1.3. 2% better from the field. This is the biggest one. 32.6% from three last season versus 37.8% from three this season. Probably a higher volume, too. Free throw percentage up by 0.6, but it's still up. So, like, percentages are all up. Points per game, rebounds per game, assists per game, steals per game, all up. And he's doing it, you know, efficiently. Like, 43% isn't terrible from the field. 38% is a career high by a wide margin for Jordan Poole. These are all good things. It was a career year for him. So for all the people that were pretty silent, right, when Jordan or very loud when Jordan Poole was playing really bad last year, they've been quite silent when he's been playing good. You know, ESPN, SportsCenter, Bleacher Report, they're the first to post when Jordan Poole goes like 1 of 9 from the field last January. But they're you know, sometimes they'll post it. But when Jordan Poole goes off, it's a little bit more quiet. And it shouldn't be, because he should be, you know, praised and applauded for putting in the work and getting better. You know, as the years gone on and as his 2 years of DC have ended, he was easily the best player on the team. He did it efficiently. He, you know, loved by all the young guys, is clear veteran and mentor for a lot of those guys, especially Bilal. So can't say enough good things about Poole, especially in year two. It's still to be seen what happens with his future in Washington. He's still under contract for, I believe, 2 more years at around $30 million. So that's a lot of money. The Wizards shouldn't be in a rush to trade him, but I do wonder if teams start to creep in around Washington. You know, you got Bob Carrington, you got AJ Johnson. Let's say you get Dylan Harper in this draft. That's a lot of guards. You have Bilal Coulibaly as well. I don't know. Are you looking to trade Jordan Poole in that contract right now? Who knows? And if, you know, a team like Orlando calls and they're pretty desperate because they have no offense and need a guy like Poole, if they offer you a pair of first-round picks, I don't know if the Wizards can turn it down realistically. But again, it depends if anybody wants to not only pay Poole's contract. Let me say this. I think Jordan Poole was arguably the least tradable contract in the league, apart from like Beal and stuff. When he was on the Wizards the first 5 or 6 months, nobody would have traded for Jordan Poole. The Wizards would have to attach first-round picks and draft capital with Jordan Poole when he first started playing in D.C. to move him. And now it's a real conversation of, okay, you want Jordan Poole? I'm going to need probably 2 first-round picks. And that's where it's going to start. So that just shows you the jump that he's made from year one in D.C. to year two, to where the Wizards not only would have to attach draft capital to move him, but now teams might not only be interested in him at that contract, but also would be willing to give up draft capital to get him. That's a pretty big jump. And so I got to give him his props to Jordan Poole. Really good year two, career year two. So shout out to him. And then also, you know, the four rookies plus Bilal, that's a really good start. Obviously, you went 18-64. That's great. Career year for Poole, all of that. Made some good trades at the deadline that I'll get to soon. But you also have set yourself up to where you want to be. The whole goal of this season was solidifying a 14% chance at Cooper Flagg. And the Wizards have done that. So whatever measurement you have for success in this season, just remember that that was probably the biggest. You know, you want the development of the young guys, and you want all of these other things like Poole playing well to happen, right? But you also wanted a 14% chance at Cooper Flagg. It's kind of why you're tanking again. And they got it. They have a really good shot at all the other prospects too, but they solidified that. And they've clinched a top 6 pick, which again, they wanted to do by being one of the worst teams in the league, is not being able to fall outside the top 5, top 6 range, and they block both those things down. So again, they're hitting all these check marks, and I'm sitting here and saying, how can anyone really be mad at this season? Like, this has kind of gone pretty much according to plan, and now if Memphis doesn't make the playoffs, that throws a big wrench into it. That sucks. But if they do, you're sitting here with 2 top 20 picks, 3 top 40 picks in a really deep draft class, and you also have a chance to get Cooper Flagg or any of these other great prospects, in addition to the plethora of young talent you already have and all the picks and the swaps and all that you have from Phoenix and all those trades. You're sitting really pretty. And so my assessment of year two is great. I think this has gone perfectly to plan. I mean, I predicted 18-64. I'm going to toot my own horn again. I predicted that in October, and they did it. And I think this has been a really great year for the rebuild. Whether you watched 1 game, 0 games, or all 82 like me, because I'm psychotic and I continue to watch this team and cover this team, I think you can understand that this was a pretty good season, all things considered. And this is kind of where the Wizards wanted to be and envisioned being when they were sat there in October at the start of the year. And now they're here April 13th. I think Michael Winger and Will Dawkins and Ted Leonsis and all them are pretty excited with where they are and where they're heading. And so obviously the real work starts now. There's a lot to go their way still, and that's kind of by luck of the draw. You have the coin flips to see if they get 18, 19, or 20. You have the play-in tournament to see if that Marcus Smart trade is the greatest trade I've seen, or, you know, has kind of been one of those, okay, kind of came back to bite us. Not our fault, because Will Dawkins couldn't imagine when Memphis was third in the West when he made this trade that they would miss the playoffs and fire their coach and all that, but it could turn around to haunt them. But nonetheless, like, you're in a really good spot, but you have a lot of work to do. Some things need to go your way. Those coin flips need to go your way with the Memphis pick and the Phoenix pick. But you also have some key dates, and I want to outline some key offseason dates for everyone. Starting on May 12th, and I get nervous just thinking about it, because last year I was really nervous, and the prize was Zachary Sache or Alex Saar, and this year it's Cooper Flagg. Like, imagine how nervous everyone was for the Wemby lottery, and the Wizards realistically had the seventh best odds of getting him, or sorry, maybe 8th best odds of getting Wemby. But this year it's actually real because they have 14% chance. So considering how nervous I was for that 2 years ago, it's going to be really nerve-wracking, especially because they traded Denny Avdija to make sure they could be in a spot to get here. And if Mark Tatum flips that card for the 6th pick and it's the Wizards logo, I don't even know what I'm going to feel. I might just be like numb. Like, I don't know, because it's this whole season leading up to let's give ourselves a shot. And then you end up getting the absolute worst that you could get. And I remember saying this before last year's lottery, and it obviously worked out well, correct? But they just got past – the Wizards could fall at the six, right? That was the worst. They get past six. I look at my dad and my brother. I'm like, okay, that's great, but I'm going to get a little greedy. Like, give me top four. And then he turns it over, and the fifth pick goes to the Pistons. And Pistons fans probably felt numb too. They're like, not again. 2 years in a row, we have the worst record, and we get the worst pick we could get at five. And the Wizards, I'm like, okay, we made the top four. And it's pretty cool, right? Because then they go to commercial break, and you have all these teams that are pretty upset. But then the teams that are still there, they're like, oh, my God, like, for 5 minutes, we can sit here and pretend that we have a really good shot. Well, not pretend, but, like, go through, oh, like, what if we actually do win the first pick? Like, what if we got Zion here? What if we get Wemby here? And that's really fun, but it's also the longest 5 minutes of your life. And then you get back, and reality sets in, and Mark Tatum flips the card. And when he flipped it last year, and it wasn't the Wizards, I was like, there's no way they actually are in the top three. And then he flips it again, and it's Houston at three. And you're sitting there like, there's no way they just won the lottery. And he flips the number two pick, and it's the Wizards. And you're kind of upset for a second, but then you realize, okay, they're probably going to get star anyway. It's not the same this year. If the Wizards got all the way up to two and then they didn't get it, and some team that was supposed to get the 10th pick gets the first pick, I personally am going to be very mad. And I think Wizards fans will be too, because that team not only didn't deserve to jump them, but the Wizards were also close to getting that franchise-altering guy that they need, and they missed out barely yet again. I mean, talk about last year barely missing, the Wemby year and the Zion year being one combination away from getting those guys. And then you get this year, you're so close to Cooper Flagg, and you get the second pick. And then I think 5 minutes later, I'm going to realize, okay, they got Dylan Harper, and that's phenomenal. They get a point guard that can revolutionize the way they play, a 6'6 guard that can play both sides. Like, I will be fine. I'll be just fine. I think I'll be able to pretty much rationalize anything. At six, I'll say, give me Derek Queen. He's the next, I don't know, like Zach Randolph or whatever comp you throw at him, and I'll rationalize it, but I'm still going to be a little bit pressed. So, the lottery, I don't even think I mentioned the date because I got so caught away with what could happen. But May 12th at 6:30 p.m. is the NBA draft lottery. So if you want to go, mark your calendars right now. That is possibly the biggest date yet of this rebuild, is May 12th at 6:30 to see if the Wizards get hosed and they get five or six, if they are right and they get three or four, or if they're lucky and get two, or absolutely very lucky, get the first pick, get Cooper Flagg, and this rebuild is on the rise. It is right there towards getting to the playoffs, the play-in, whatever you want to call it, but they are on the rise with Cooper Flagg. This thing is real. So that's May 12th at 6:30 p.m. Let's say the Wizards win the NBA lottery, or the NBA draft lottery, and then you go to June 25th. That is the NBA draft where they'll take Cooper Flagg. It's also the 26th because now it's the second year of it being a two-day event, but June 25th is day one, round one of the NBA draft. It's going to be big no matter what. You know, no matter where the Wizards are picking, because they will definitely have two picks, and in all likelihood, I hope, I don't want to jinx it, but could have three picks if Memphis makes the playoffs. So that'll be cool. I don't know how my coverage is going to be of that, but I will be covering it, and I'm excited for it. So stay tuned for that. And then July 10th to the 20th is NBA Summer League. The Wizards, if everyone plays, have a chance to have the most stacked Summer League roster. I would expect Sar, Carrington, George, AJ Johnson to play, right? I don't know why they wouldn't. And then you have other guys that'll be your rookies, you know, your top six draft pick, your, if you get Memphis's pick, that draft pick, the pick with Phoenix's second round pick. Like, that's three guys, hopefully, that you can also throw in there. I don't know if Tristan will play, who knows, but maybe some other guys you sign. But, like, it's going to be cool, right? And they're going to have a really good team, and they're going to compete, and it's going to be nice to see all the rookies, where they got to in the summer from the couple of months they had to then in July. So I hope they all play, but that's Summer League, the 10th to the 20th. But May 12th at 6:30 p.m., circle it on your calendar, the NBA draft lottery. It's going to be big. So that's kind of what to look for ahead. Other than that, some big decisions this summer. I touched on Poole. I don't think he'll be traded, but you never know. Corey Kispert is actually someone I think might get traded. A guy that had a down year, you know, just signed that extension in October. It's on a pretty cheap deal, right? But I don't know that teams will be willing to give up what the Wizards want, which I think would probably be a first. And so the Wizards, are they willing to take a second or two to move Corey Kispert? I mean, if I'm the Wizards, I don't know if I would. I mean, he's a great player, you know, really good, you know, offensive player, good shooter, best cutter on the team, smart player. But defensively, he's kind of a liability, and you don't necessarily know if you want that, especially when you're Will Dawkins. You didn't draft him, you extended him, but you kind of want these two-way guys, and Corey Kispert's not that. He's a specialist. And so I could see him being expendable. I think pretty much anyone that wasn't drafted by Dawkins and Winger is expendable at this point. But I could see him getting dealt if the Wizards on draft night get, you know, something that they want. I just don't know who wants him. So I don't know what the interest around the league is for Corey Kispert. Maybe we'll see some rumors kick up around the draft. But that's if you ask me, you know, who's one guy that could get dealt, I would probably say Corey Kispert this offseason. But again, last year, I would never have told you that Denny Avdija could have gotten traded at the draft, and he did. So, you know, I'm just going to shut up and not talk about it anymore. Other than that, you know, Sadiq Bey, there was a weird thing where the Wizards listed him as available yesterday, and then the next hour, they listed him as out. So I guess that was just a typo. I did find it weird that he would only play the last game of the season when it was pretty optimal for the Wizards to just lose. So I guess I should have known that it was a typo, but I was, I guess, fooled. But he didn't play all season, and I said this at the beginning of the year that I thought Sadiq Bey could potentially not play this year. There's no reason for him to really come back too early, and ACLs can be tricky. He tore his ACL last March, so it was late in the season. He's gotten, you know, full, you know, it's already been, what, 13 months since he tore it. It was, you know, early March of 2024, so 13 months, he should be pretty recovered. I'm sure he's doing on-court work. He practiced a couple times with Gogo, so I would definitely, you know, think he's ready for next season, and I think he'll be a rotation guy, only making $6 million in year two of a three-year contract. He is a trade piece. Like, I think if he plays really well and the Wizards are, like, not good at the deadline, then even if they are good, I think they'll be sellers no matter what. I think they could definitely get a first for Sadiq Bey if he plays really well, maybe a pair of seconds. But the Wizards have always, in this rebuild, been, you know, acquire and flip mode. I mean, they signed Valanciunas to a three-year deal in August and dealt him 5-6 months later in February because they got 2 second-round picks. You look at, you know, a guy like Malcolm Brogdon in that trade, he's not going anywhere. But they acquired him from Denny Avdija, and I'm sure they looked to trade him but couldn't. Like, all these guys are coming in here, and the Wizards are looking to flip them and flip them and flip them. And sometimes it works out like Valanciunas, and sometimes it doesn't, like Brogdon. But at the same time, they're actively trying to do that. So I could see that happening again in the offseason with some of the other guys like Bay, even at next year's deadline. But other than that, I've seen a couple of people talk about with Malone and Taylor Jenkins getting fired, whether the Wizards should fire Brian Keefe and hire those guys. I think Keefe's done a pretty good job. I mean, player development was the, you know, his calling card. That's one of the reasons they hired him. And I mean, if you look at the rookies, they all developed at a pretty good rate. Bilal was pretty solid. He just got to get better shooting. But, you know, you saw flashes there clearly in his game and things that got better. I mean, Brian Keefe is he's not the main reason Jordan Poole is playing this good, but he's kind of unlocked him. And that's something you can give him credit for. And the team did get better. You know, they started 2-6, 2-18. They lost 16 in a row twice, and it looked pretty bleak. A lot of people were calling for him to get fired. But he turned it around. He won some, you know, tough games at Detroit, at Denver. The team was way more competitive. They should have won at Indiana if they didn't call off the dogs to try to lose as much as they did. But nonetheless, I think Keefe's done a pretty good job considering he's got one of the worst, if not the worst roster in the league. And he somehow won 18 games in the NBA, won against some pretty good teams. And, you know, the guys got better. The guys seemed to like playing for him. He's under contract. Ted doesn't like to pay coaches to not coach his teams. So I'm all for keeping Brian Keefe. I would be absolutely shocked if he got fired this offseason. I don't think there's any reason to fire him. I think he's done a good job. So that's my assessment, at least my takeaway on Keefe. But I'm trying to look at anything else. I think I kind of hopefully have recapped the season pretty well. I have, in terms of what to look for in terms of my content, the episodes and stuff, my end of season awards, I nicknamed them the Teddy Awards after Ted Leonsis. I did my first annual one last year, and that was a hit. A lot of people liked all the awards. It's fun awards, you know, MVP, DPOY, Rookie of the Year, that's all. But I think I have one for best trade, most surprising player, the Thank God You Were Traded Award, the Tank Commander. I think you probably know who won that award. Hint, he's not on the team anymore. But I have best moments of the season. Like, it's going to be a fun episode, a more relaxed one. So be on the lookout for that. That'll be probably coming Wednesday or Thursday. I got to lock in for this Grizzlies playing game on Tuesday and Thursday, so hopefully just Tuesday. But I'm very excited for that. Other than that, you know, going to be doing some draft stuff at some point. You know, maybe try to bring on some draft gurus, because I watch college basketball and I know the draft, but I'm not as knowledgeable on that as some people. So I want to bring some experts on here to kind of inform everyone. So hopefully that's in the cards as well. But again, I'm going to wrap it up by just thanking everyone for following along. I mean, this is my third year covering the team, I guess, like full time. You know, this isn't like my job, but I
I take it as serious as it was my job. You know, I want to make sure that I'm always here for Wizards fans, to be that outlet, to be that source for news and content and coverage of the team, because I know that there's not a lot of people doing it. I mean, the Wizards are quite the irrelevant franchise in the grand scheme of the NBA and the general sports world. But it's nice to have a voice in the community that's, like, you know, still there and consistent. And so I try to pride myself on that. You know, I haven't missed a game in, like, what, 10? I think this is the 11th straight year that I haven't missed a game. The last 3 years, I clearly haven't missed a game, whether it was live tweeting. I've live tweeted them all. I do my keys to the game. I do my final score tweets. I live tweet through it all. You know, I'm doing pods. I think it was 48 pods from this time last year to now, which I'm very proud of being that consistent. It's at least 1 to 2 pods per week at that rate. But I'm really happy with that, and I'm happy with what I produce. And it was nice. I tweeted out today. I do the same tweet every year for the most part. I just change it from year 2 to year 3 because of year 3 this year. Because I just want to, like, wrap up the season, but also thank everyone for following along, because yes, like, it takes me to be here and being consistent and always, you know, games in Phoenix and game 51 where no one's watching and the Wizards are down by 40, that I'm still here. And that's me. You know, I understand that's not easy. And I'm happy that I do that. But again, it's nice to see that Wizards fans appreciate that. I mean, the love and support I got on this tweet alone, it's almost 1,000 likes, 114 comments and retweets, 54 quote and retweets about all people just saying really nice things about my coverage and about the fact that, like, I keep them informed, and that I'm the reason that they're still, you know, enjoying watching this team and they're still engaged and I'm informing them on all this stuff. That it really actually means something to me, because that's the reason that I do it. You know, it's the reason I'm consistent in game 59 when they're down 35, you know, because I know that people are relying on me to keep them informed and continue to cover this team. So if you are one of the people that commented, or even if you didn't comment and you just follow along, thank you for following along. It really does mean a lot to me. I really do appreciate it, because none of this would be possible if I didn't have the audience to do it for. So again, I know this is a long-winded end, but thank you from the bottom of my heart for following along, for interacting with my tweets, you know, liking, retweeting, commenting. I always enjoy interacting with you. If you DM me, I'm always going to respond. So thank you for the conversations. Thank you for all that you do in terms of following me and engaging with the content, because it makes what I do possible. So that was a long thank you, but generally, thank you guys for following along. It means the world to me. That's going to do it for year 3. We will be back to resume year 4 with the next pod, hopefully on Wednesday, with the second annual Teddy Awards. I'm really excited for that. More fun episode. At the end of the day, very happy with year 2 of the rebuild. I think the Wizards have something cooking here. I'm really excited for it. Also, go Grizzlies. I mean, Wizards fans, Grizzlies fans are right in line. The Wizards, I will say this to end the episode, where the Grizzlies finish, even if they win the 7-8 game, they are still tied with Golden State and Milwaukee regular season-wise, so it doesn't matter. Wizards fans should not be rooting for the Warriors. They should be rooting for the Grizzlies. At this point, everything is set in stone. It is just get in the playoffs. For the love of God, Grizzlies, get in the playoffs. That's what Wizards fans need. That's what they want. So Wizards fans, you know, buy a Ja Morant jersey, whatever you got to do, but you're big Grizzlies fans for the next, you know, couple of days, at least on Tuesday, and if they have to be on Thursday, because they need to make the playoffs. That trade would be so good if they end up making the playoffs, another top 20 pick. So I'll leave you with that. Go Grizzlies. I usually end it with go Wiz, but I'm also going to end with go Grizzlies, because that's really important. But again, thank you guys for following along all season. I'll be back on Wednesday with the Teddy Awards, and that's going to do it. Thanks, guys. Go Wiz.